Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables a real-time collaboration for teams around the globe, including this one. Zoom, how the world connects. Hello, and welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. My name is Carter Rodriguez, and I am not Justin Rowan, because this man is on vacation around 33 weeks a year. I'm telling you, he's living it up all-inclusive in Cabo or wherever the hell he is. But he ain't here because he doesn't love the Cavs like I do. Luckily, I found a man who loves the Cavs like I do. Longtime friend of the podcast, part of the man who runs the Twitter account for Fear of the Sword, among other things, Ryan Morton. How you doing, Mort?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing good. It's nice to have you back. It was just hard because you clearly weren't paying good enough attention to provide any value to the team. Before this podcast started, you told me that your audio has been terrible for years on these podcasts because you didn't know how to switch to your headset mic. Can you confirm or deny?
False. No, absolutely false. Absolutely. First off, I never said my audio was terrible.
Well, I'll tell you it was terrible.
A spurless accusation thrown at me. And second off, it wasn't that I didn't know how. I just never really thought of it.
we're actively telling you sound bad, and that's what you got. I never thought of it.
It never occurred to me. I'm not a professional. I'm an IT professional, but
that's worse.
It never occurred to me. And then one day I'm playing Xbox. I've got this headset that just connects to it automatically, and apparently it connects to all Windows devices. Which I knew, but I didn't really know, if that makes sense.
Well, I am not very proud of you, though I am pretty proud of the Cavs, who, despite a four-game losing streak while their team's heads have fallen off, have really fought and kind of been competitive, despite the fact that they've lost Mobley for 2 to 4 weeks. They lost Sexton for the season. But they've been mostly hanging in games, kind of falling apart late as the teams they're playing against kind of outgun them. But kind of what have you seen from this team as they've kind of had to survive this stretch of just an absolute horror show schedule combined with how do these position groups that everyone makes fun of the Cavs for being overstocked at keep getting wiped out?
It's funny that they were playing, what is that, Davis, like the sixth center, the seventh center?
I remember Chris Fedor actually tweeted, Ed Davis is never going to play for this team.
Just starting a couple games. It's just bad, man. I mean, they're as cursed as any team. I don't know if I want to say cursed, but yeah, even just yesterday, Darius Garland is now questionable because he gets elbowed in the face. Going for a basketball.
Justin turned into an absolute Neanderthal in the DMs about DeAndre Bembry. He was so mad.
I mean, listen, if you said that DeAndre Bembry and Enes Kanter were in a gulag somewhere for basketball crimes, I wouldn't argue the point.
I think you meant to say Kelly Olynyk, but that's fine.
Kelly Olynyk has been dead to me for years.
That's absolutely fair.
Leave it to the Celtics. When was the last time the Cavs got a forward that you were incredibly excited about? And when did it look like it was really working? Both times, here come the Boston Celtics and their incredibly foreign, shouldn't be on the court, power forward of some kind to rip his arm clean out. So,
you know what? I hadn't actually made either of those connections till now, and I'm very, very proud of you. So obviously, and this is actually the first pod we've had since Colin was announced as being out for the season. So we probably should talk a little bit about the impact there. It's obviously terrible for Colin. He has an expiring contract about to hit restricted free agency. This was kind of the, hey, I can be helpful on a winning team kind of prove it year for him. And now he kind of enters with a bit of uncertainty and into free agency. I do think, and I'm curious what you think about this, because I do think this is if you are on Team Colin Sexton as empty calories, then the Cavs really should be just fine the rest of the year. Like, do you feel like, to some extent, this is kind of a proof of concept, a forced proof of concept for a Sextonless life? But, like, right. I kind of feel like it is, at least intellectually.
I mean, it has to be. Right. Well, I mean, how could it not, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're finding out what you have. The only thing that you don't have as you figure that out is an actual two guard. Like, you're playing a lot of Okoro, who, I mean, bless him, he works as hard as anybody. He cannot shoot.
No, and three jumpers against Brooklyn, or three threes, was like manna from heaven.
Right. Like, you know, you're playing Ricky Rubio in that spot, who has shot well above anything anybody would expect, at least on, I mean, those step back and pull up threes, his numbers are kind of nuts against his career. But in general, yeah, I mean, you're seeing Darius Garland not really having to share the ball until he and Rubio share the court. You're seeing what the Cavs would look like without that extra person that dribbles a ton. However, you're also seeing that, you know, they're missing him in transition. They're missing his shooting. They're missing, you know, when the game bogs down and they can't create offense because teams are just switching and switching and switching, especially without Mobley or Markkanen or someone other than Dean Wade at three to force that mismatch. You're missing the fact that he can get to the rim against almost anybody.
Yeah. And really, like, Darius. So, like, you know, I think with him, you just kind of feel and we saw this in the late era LeBron teams the second time around, where in the regular season, teams would just switch and switch and switch, and there were lineups LeBron could kind of beat. It was like, this dude just isn't going to attack 47 straight switches in the regular season.
Right.
So if they didn't have Kyrie healthy or someone like that that could kind of, you know, share the load, it just kind of was too much of a burden. And the Cavs, I think, right now are kind of like having that, except with Darius instead of LeBron, which is, you know, no slight to Darius, a little bit of a downgrade. And he's really the only one right now that's able to punish those switches consistently. Sometimes Jarrett can on some deep seals, and sometimes Laurie can when he kind of slips, but like, there's just not a lot there right now to diversify the offense when they're getting switched on.
No. And I mean, you saw against Brooklyn last night, for example, tons of open Okoro shots, and he hit a good number of them. And then here comes the end of the game when you really need him, and you know, you're going wanting. You saw in the first Brooklyn game, I mean, Darius shot, was he 1 of 10? From three?
Yeah.
I mean, he had just
He is putting up the kinds of shots we want to see, even though the efficiency isn't super right there right now.
I mean, he was great against Golden State, and he was great last night. It's kind of the next point of growth is, you know, going from can be that guy to always being that guy. It takes a lot.
And right now, Cavs kind of need him to always be that guy against teams who are as good as the teams the Cavs are playing. Like, if you were playing an Orlando, San Antonio, Houston stretch or something like that, then Darius can be the guy, you know, 70% of the time he's on the floor. Right now, he has to be kind of great the whole time. And
right.
And that's where, and like, that's kind of why I'm like, you know, I've never been a Sexton super fan. I've never been a Sexton, like, terrible detractor. I feel like I'm something of a centrist with him. And it's like you kind of, I really felt his absence against Brooklyn specifically. And maybe that's because he dropped a 50 burger on him last year and just went bananas. But like, you just kind of feel that, like, oh, things aren't quite working right now. Everyone's tired and they're switching, you know, freaking LaMarcus Aldridge on, like, Colin Sexton would have been cooking those switches.
Right. I mean, they only have one good defender. I mean, well, they have KD, but outside of KD, they have Bruce Brown. And he's good, but that's where having, you know, a Sexton would be great. And last night was the first time since he's been hurt that they scored 100 points.
Wow. Like, I didn't know that. I was on a trip last week, so I wasn't as dialed in.
Yeah. That fact is courtesy of the broadcast.
Yeah,
I believe.
So yeah, I mean, like, I do think they miss him right now. And I think that there was a lot of people who thought that they were going to be the 2016 Warriors or something the second they got this ball stopper off the court. And frankly, like, and I think Justin made this point recently on the pod where he's like, Honestly, Okoro has stopped the ball more than Colin has this season.
Well, yeah. Well, he doesn't know what to do, and that's like it's kind of heartbreaking. Not heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's a little heavy.
I mean, it's sad. It's sad to see. He's 20 years old. He puts in tons of work. And, I mean, he has no idea. Like, even when he's hitting those shots, some of those shots he threw up last night were just absolute rocks. Like, he doesn't have a great feel for his jumper. He doesn't even have a great feel for what he wants to do. He passes up open shots to take two dribbles and then give up the ball because he doesn't actually have a plan.
Yeah. I mean, offense is just tough for him right now. Like, it's not instinctual at all. And I think at least last year, like, it was a little ugly last year. But with that said, like, you know, he's had moments where it looked like he was really kind of vibing within the offense to kind of close the year. And that was part of him getting the ball a lot. And that really hasn't translated this year. But I do think it's probably worth noting here that, like, hey, like, he is coming off a hamstring injury. And those are very, very capable of messing you up physically, even after you get back on the court, except Kevin Durant, apparently. And like, so, you know, I'm not pulling the panic button yet. And I kind of, in a way, I kind of like that he's just going to have to keep playing. like the Cavs don't have a ton of options right now. So it's like, hey, Isaac, we know you work hard. We know we like you. We know that we believe in you. So you're going to just have to shoot your way out of this one, pal.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, and I don't think you can give up or press the pan. I mean, he's 20.
He's a kid.
You know,
like, if anyone has ever been good at telling people not to worry about how kids are playing, it's you. Like, you've always resisted the panic button, I feel, regarding the kids on the team.
My take is that playing in the NBA is hard.
That's a good take.
But, I mean, we just saw last year, you know, the worst year of Jetty's career. And I did fall into the trap of, all right, I'm ready to see him, you know, do something else with his basketball talents in another place. But Ricky Rubio, you know, working with him and working in a defined role has made him a very good NBA role player again. So the idea that at 20, he can't figure out, I mean, a consistent jump, his jumper doesn't look broken. It's just like,
I was just talking to someone else about that. It's like the form isn't like a disaster. It looks like he's just in his head.
Yeah. Like, it's not Michael Kidd-Gilchrist where you're like, oh man, this is never going to work. Lonzo Ball could figure out how to hit a three. Yeah. Like, he can come around.
And the reality is he doesn't have to get good at it. He has to get not bad at it. You know, like
just anything offensively right now, like being not bad at any one thing.
Yeah, he needs one thing to hang his hat on. I think you're absolutely right there.
Right. And especially like, how serious are they about this year? Because if they are, then they probably have to find somebody.
Well, maybe, you know, I mean, like the reality is, like, I think like that starting lineup has so much defensive potential that like they can just hang their hat on other stuff. Like, is he struggling so bad that he's straight up tanking your lineups? I don't think so. I think he can have games where he's going to do that, and that's going to be frustrating. And like, that's why I think like the other thing that we're not really recognizing is that Jetty's also hurt right now. So Jetty doesn't, you don't have as many, like JB doesn't have as many tools in his tool belt as he normally would, you know? So like, not only is Colin out, Jetty's also been hurt, and Dylan Windler just hasn't really shown up as much as you would want. He's shown little flashes and then big stretches of just being a little bit invisible.
Still can't get on the court.
Yeah, still just can't get on the court. So like, you know, I feel like JB doesn't have as many options, and that kind of makes the impact of Okoro struggling a little more magnified. But like, long term, I just have a hard time being like terribly panicky about, I mean, what is really a 7-game stretch for a 20-year-old?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. They're 500. It's early in the year. And
which is insane. And that's what I just can't be like too worried when the team's 500.
Right. Oh, when you guys were here, like I think it was when Justin and I were waiting for you at the restaurant. I was like, man, they might go 0-10. Like, we had a real conversation about them not winning any of their first 10 games.
And they weren't favored in any of their first 10 games. So yeah. Vegas agreed.
Like I thought as after they got smoked in those first two that they were in some real trouble. So I mean, 500 is great. Having, I think, a proven workable lineup. Like, I think you've seen how they play without Markkanen. You see how they play without Mobley. You see how they play without Allen. And they're still a solid defensive team that, you know, busts their ass. So I think you have an identity, which is something I've been saying for maybe since LeBron left. Like, yeah, what's your actual plan? Who are you every time you go out there? And they've never known. And maybe that's a part of Sexton not being there. I don't think so, because he's part of it.
No, I don't think so. I think their identity is, like, it's funny. I actually didn't like them keeping Dean Wade in the starting lineup and kind of insisting on tall ball when they didn't have Laurie. And, like, I think to some extent, that's a spot where I kind of, I don't even think the lineups have been that successful, but I think it's something where JB goes, this is just what we hang our hat on, so this is what we're doing.
And I won't play Dylan Windler ever at all for any reason.
Well, you know, it's, well, I mean, in fairness, Dylan's got to earn it.
This is every player on the roster that is not named Dylan Windler. Lamar Stevens just got hurt.
Stop it.
Dean, get in there.
Stop it. Yeah, I mean, but like to your point, like I do think the identity is there. They're playing really, really good defense. They're with some sketchy personnel. Like Laurie at the three just shouldn't work. I still don't think it should work, but yet it's working. And he came back to the lineup, and I thought he had his best game as a Cavalier against Brooklyn. What do you kind of?
I think he does some things that maybe we weren't prepared. I don't know, prepared for him to do.
Like the little Euro step, well, catching the ball in transition off that Rubio feed, was like, ooh.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he handles a little better than we expected, or I expected. He, you know, he moves the ball. He's not, and obviously the Chicago Bulls have not been before this year a very interesting team to watch. So my Lauri Markkanen scouting report was not very complete. And he hasn't even shot that well. And
yeah, I think you see the stuff that people don't like about him, but it's just like, I feel like they've been a little exaggerated. Like, okay, yeah, he can't move anyone in the post. He cannot move anybody in the post.
Well, but now like, he's three, so fine.
Yeah, but like he doesn't really need to, you know. Like I liked the play against Brooklyn last night where he just kind of got pushed a bit, just faced up and just hit a rhythm 15 footer. Like you don't need to like do this like back down bruiser thing. Like the team doesn't really, and like frankly, I don't even think this Cavs roster, once they're healthy, is really built to accommodate that anyway. Like with Mobley and Allen on the floor, like what is he gonna mash dudes? Like he's not gonna have time.
Right. Well, and that's what's kind of interesting, that playing him at the three like absolutely shouldn't work. But in this scenario, it actually covers all of his or most of his known deficiencies. Like he can't back anyone down. All right, he's at the three. He's not great at covering in space. Okay, you have two amazingly athletic 7-footers behind him.
And it's weird. I do think he's quicker than people think, just not laterally. Like he can cover ground just because he's tall and like a long strider. I don't think his feet are terribly slow. So like even when he gets beat, he can kind of just recover. He could, because he's funneling these players into these bigs, he like it doesn't matter as much that he's gotten beat, because by the if the bigs on the back line kind of stop the action, he's able to recover and just be tall. You know, like he doesn't have to be strong or physical. He just needs to be tall. Like the stat that I loved, it was about a week ago that I looked it up. So I'm not sure where they stand now, but they were like 29th in defensive rebound rate, like giving up offensive boards on like 33% of their possessions, like terrible. But they were like 14th in opposing second chance points. So like teams are getting boards on them and then trying to go up in this, you know, this army of trees. Missing, maybe getting again, missing again, and then eventually the Cavs get the board. So like, even though those plays are really tough to watch as fans, like I just don't think it, I think the practical outcome is Cavs ball they didn't score.
Right.
Which is, yeah, I've heard, the point of defense.
I mean, well, the other practical outcome is eventually, you know, Paul Millsap and LaMarcus Aldridge are getting those rebounds and they are scoring. But
yes, yeah.
But I mean, for a long time, you know, it was really good. But overall,
well, also Mobley's not there. You know, like their rim protection is a little more compromised right now.
A bit skint, yeah. They're playing. I mean, I think Dean Wade has been a lot better than Certainly, I expect.
I like Dean Wade, even on games where he doesn't have big blocks. I just like him. I think he's better on defense than anyone wants to recognize. Like, he moves his feet pretty damn well.
He moves his feet well, and he'll do, like, last night was great because he's hitting threes, and he, like, made some dribble moves in the open court, and I'm like, man, he's, like, really getting it. He's better than I thought. And the very next time down, he's, like, trying to back someone down, and he dribbles the ball straight off his face.
Yeah, yeah. Such is the life of being a role player in the NBA.
But, like, I mean, he's good. He's, like, a
he's found money, man.
He was solid last year. Is Lowry Markkanen a system player? Dean Wade looks fine in the same spot. I mean,
but it's a different kind of fine. Like, Dean is not going to get 9 three-point attempts up, you know? He's just not. Like, and that's what I like about the fact that what Lowry kind of adds to this offense is, like, he's just someone who's going to fire even if he's not that open. And this is a team that really needs people to fire when they're not that open.
Right. Yeah. I mean, someone has to. Someone, and again, that circles all the way back to what do you do without Colin Sexton, which I think that really is heartbreaking, honestly. Like,
it sucks.
I mean, you know, just for him, like, he deserves money. He, you know, works his tail off. He's made himself into a really good NBA player. When
he was not, he was not trending. Like, the first half of his rookie year was trending to be a guy who is going to score and never be good at anything.
I mean, I was at a draft party, and that is the angriest I've seen. I was.
I will always die on the hill.
Anthony Bennett. I was at the Anthony Bennett.
Well, I'll always die on the hill that, like, Colin also bore the brunt of, like, I think, at least I remember my experience that draft night. That was the night where I was like, okay, Bron's definitely not coming back. Like, they weren't able to trade it. They weren't able to trade the pick for, like, I remember we were talking about Kemba, and, like, we had all these, and, well, I guess, thank God in hindsight. But, you know, like, you know, I think he bore the brunt of so much of this. Like, he was the Kyrie return. He was the final, you know, the selection was the final, like, bell tolling that, like, okay, LeBron's probably gone. And, like, so, like, and then his shot
rebuild.
And then the vets were so hard on him when he started.
It's like, all right, man, we don't have LeBron. We don't have Kyrie. We don't even have 33% of Isaiah Thomas.
We don't even have Kevin Love because he got hurt a day into the season.
Breaks his foot on day one. Okay, well, the coach thinks he was lied to. Well, he's gone 6 games in.
So Colin, I just think, bore the brunt of, like, this first rebuild. So, like, And I do think, like, much like his actual game, I think he's kind of, like, willed his way into a lot of people's hearts, I think mine included. Yeah. It just stinks that he's hurt. You know, he's not, because, like, I felt like he was really playing the kind of basketball we wanted to see from him to start the year. He was killing it off ball. He wasn't dominating the ball. He was showing some internal passing development. Like, not, he's never going to be Magic Johnson, obviously, but he was starting to make the right pass on time.
Right.
A little bit more, and the efficiency numbers were down just because his jumper wasn't going in. Right. So it was like, okay, here's our skeleton key. Like once the jumper starts falling, everything clicks in. And the fact that he kind of got robbed of that, it just sucks.
And you don't learn anything. Like, he,
that's a great point.
I think he was playing really effective team defense. Like, his energy and effort and athleticism on that side of the ball translated really well with having especially Mobley and Allen and just all these huge guys. And then he's kind of roaming around back there too, making hustle plays. And now what do you don't know? Like, you have Darius Garland, and he's going to play a whole season on what should be his breakout season or something resembling that without Colin in the lineup. So you still don't know if those two can pair together, because, you know, they were in and out last year. And then Colin's going to be a restricted free agent. And what do you do? So someone makes him a big offer, which you got to think somebody will. I mean, you know.
It is really hard. A lot of those cap teams don't have cap space anymore. And, you know, and the one thing we should probably note is the Cavs did not let Jared Allen really get into restricted free agency. Right. And, like, I don't think there's any reason to rule out that, like, they just take care of it. You know, like, there's a world in which they just throw a good number out. Colin's coming off an injury, and they just say, okay, good. And I'm pretty fine with that. Like, I think that if you were anti-Colin, so of the anti-Sexton contingent on Cavs Twitter, only the really, really dumb ones just want to let him walk.
Yeah. Like,
only dumb people want restricted free agents to walk. It's not good.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't describe myself as anti him. Obviously, I have really enjoyed him. I am 50-50 on, can you build a team with him and Darius Garland as the backcourt?
That's fine. Like that. I'm talking about asset management right now, though.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying in general, like, here you are again. You still don't know if it works. And if you have, just thinking of hype, I can't even think of anybody right now. But if they're, say, you know, an A or B, hey, we can bring back Colin Sexton, or there is a somewhat similarly capable 6'5", 6'6", like more natural two guard out there. Like, now you've got a decision to make.
But this team isn't operating as a cap space team right now. So that's why it's like you keep your talented young players, and if they have to make that decision to kind of pull the trigger on fit, all they have to do is not lock themselves into a albatross. Like, as long as it's not an albatross, they'll be fine. I think in a lot of ways that was their argument with Jared Allen. It's like, hey, this guy's gonna be fine. Like, worst case, let's say Evan Mobley immediately shows out as the best center in the league. I think I would surmise that Kobe Altman was like, I'll be able to find somewhere for Jared Allen and get something back. If we realize we need to move Evan to the five, I think a lot of that narrative has changed since, because Mobley's looks so good as a four. But, like, you know, I think that's kind of the case with Colin. So, like, it just, I'm just sad for him and, frankly, for me, because I think this team was, like, I think it definitely dents their chances of kind of being, you know, it dents their upside a bit, right? Like, because even if they want to go, you know, chase an upgrade at the wing before the deadline, like, you lose a valuable piece and you lose valuable depth. So even if you want to trade Colin for some extra help, or if you want to trade some of your other depth for help, like, you lose that flexibility by not having him available.
And he loses the year, or we lose the year of it being a found money year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, expectations ruin fun. Sports enjoyment. Yeah. Like nothing else. So now, say the Cavs win, say they're the 10 seed this year, they get into the play-in. If Colin comes back next year, or when Colin comes back next year, if they don't look spectacular out of the gate, hey, we were the play-in, the trajectory is up, and they're playing poorly with him on the court, like, it's going to be nasty.
If they get a schedule like this again, my word.
The NBA is pretty flat.
The NBA is just, and I think that's the thing. I know a lot of people are complaining about their schedule. There just aren't that many bad teams anymore.
There aren't any real terrible. I mean, there's Orlando, there's Sacramento, and Sacramento still has talent.
San Antonio, Houston. Like, there's wins out there, but you got to go find them.
Yeah. Just this division alone. I mean, the Pacers, the Bulls, the Bucks. Detroit's terrible. Detroit's got awful. But they have Cade.
There is a real world chance. I actually want to guard the fan base against once the schedule does lighten up a bit, because, like, this is uncommonly hard. I know the NBA is flat, but, like, they're playing like top four contenders in each conference every night. But with that said, like, I almost want to, like, tell fans, like, hey, you know how we've been winning some games? We maybe shouldn't win. Some of these other teams are going to do that to us too. Like, we could go to Detroit and lose. Those games are going to feel real painful.
Seeing if we can get that annual loss in Orlando taken care of. It feels like every year you get, like, you go to Toronto in the third or fourth game of the year and lose. This year they won. So now if they can manage to do the Miami or Orlando back-to-back and not lose to the Magic, you know, that'll be a marketing point. Improvement.
Well, the other one is the mid-season trip to Portland where we lose by 47. It's just a few of those where it's just like, you know, you have those landmines all over the schedule, but, like, it really does lighten up soon. So I'm pretty hopeful. I do want to stick one thing on Sexton before we move off is, do you feel like in the very limited time we had with this, with that starting five, and we know very limited, I kind of felt like I finally saw, here's the road to this small backcourt working on defense. You know, like it is, because that's one thing Portland never did was pair them with huge mobile bigs. Like they've gotten a lot of the Robert Covington types over in Portland where it's like, hey, a good wing switch IQ defender. And like to me, and maybe this is just wishful thinking, but to me, I kind of left that opening stretch going, maybe this is the blueprint. The only way you can really play these two small guys is just have absolute monsters at the four and the five to kind of just feed them to.
I would agree. I mean, that's, you know, just as a belief system, I generally don't. Like, if I were building a team, you know, two small guards is not anywhere where I would be.
That's one thing I always want to push back there is like, you don't get to pick the roster. Like, you know, you get to pick what's available to you.
I'm aware. Conceptually, that is not a concept I embrace. So
yes, Michael Jordan would be an upgrade size-wise at the two. Just kidding. I'm kidding.
Thanks, dickhead. what I'm attempting to get to is to agree with you, if you would allow me to agree with you.
Yeah, I had to tease you first.
Is, you know, like having to, now, of course, it requires maybe the only pair. I mean, are there two other big men in the league that can both switch on the perimeter and both defend the rim? I think you have an incredibly unique pairing in Allen and Mobley. Yeah. And that they can each do everything effectively. But that's, I mean, there's a blueprint for it working. Certainly if they ran it back next year, they gave Colin, you know, 20, 22, 25 million a season, I think would probably be a pretty fair price.
Yeah.
And I think that'd be pretty exciting. And there'd be a lot of reason to think that Mobley going into year two, you know, I mean, you would expect, even though he's hurt, you know, Colin have some sort of growth in his game. He always comes back better.
Well, he'll just be older. Being older helps. It just always does. Even with that lost year of experience, like the whole team gets a little bit older. And you know, like the fact of the matter is like mobile, like we started to see stuff very late in the right before Mobley got hurt, where it's like, oh, he's starting to step into that three confidently, you know, like I didn't really expect that to be a part of his game at all this season after the first like 10 games.
Oh, those pull ups at like 15 to 17.
Yeah.
That
just makes the 4-5 pairing much more tenable long term. Like if he gets to 35% from three on even 3-4 attempts a game, like that's just such a geometry changer of the floor.
With how he can pass. Oh, dude. I'm so ready for him to come back.
Thank God, by the way, that the 2 to 4 weeks he is reported to be out occurred with the first time the Cavs actually have a few days off between each game.
Right. I saw him practicing today.
Yeah. It seems like he is, it feels like, and let me be very clear, everybody, this is not reported. We're just idiots on a podcast.
Saw a video.
But like, it does feel like, with the way the schedule kind of broke out, he might only miss, you know, he might, when you hear a guy could miss a month, you're like, oh, we're going to miss 12, 14 games. And that's maybe isn't going to happen. You know, I'm pretty eager to kind of see him get back on the floor and kind of regain his juice. But I am very encouraged to see that this team still feels like they failed all year, even without him. Like they've lost a lot off the top, in terms of kind of the heights he can take them to. But like I was a little worried that when he was hurt, that they would just kind of move into this like sloggy, like aimless style. Right. Like they'd be like, okay, we just got to survive till Evan's back. And that hasn't really been the case. You know, you would probably forgive it. They were down like 7 rotation players. And the fact that they're still pretty much like, yeah, we're going to work really, really, really hard on defense. We're going to let Darius kind of orchestrate, and Jarrett's going to be a role threat. And that's going to be enough to keep us in games. Like, that's pretty exciting.
Well, and that's what they've missed by not having a professional backup point guard for the last however many years. Like, Kevin gets hurt, you know, Darius gets hurt. Every injury, I mean, they had no point guards at one point. Like, Damian Dotson, come on. Like, you know, guys that try hard, but come, they're not point guards. Yeah.
And they're not like top end NBA point guards, you know, like, like Ricky's what? Like, he's at least top 20, 25. Which is like really good for your backup point guard.
Right. Well, especially the way he's playing now, which some of my close friends are Minnesota Timberwolves fans. I hope they don't hear this because I've never said a nice word about him to them. He's playing really well. He's playing. And so that's, you know, logjam number two. Everyone kind of expected to flip him.
No,
later in the year,
I never wanted to flip him. I was just like, I'll take 48 minutes of point guard play. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. I was open to it. But now, like,
yeah, has your opinion changed on that now? Like, is that someone who, like, if he's amenable, you're interested in kind of keeping around, even if you got to kind of pay a little bit of a premium to do it?
I think so. It would all depend on what your other options are.
Sure.
Like, they cannot go without having, I would say, yeah.
Cause like, here's the thing. I was very much on team. Like, just go get like a competent guy, like Raul Neto or someone like that from the Wizards.
Right,
and like, I just don't think that guy, like, I think that extra, like, Justin always talks about this with Jared Allen, where people will say, you know, you can get a player of Jared Allen's archetype that'll get you 80% for the league minimum. And Justin's always like, that 20% is pretty important. Like, I think
the old Kevin Love argument, you can just go get Ryan Anderson for $3 million.
Exactly. But like, I think especially at that backup point guard, that like Ricky Rubio has added that extra 20% difference in ceiling of play between Ricky Rubio and a guy like Neto is like, it's the difference between the Cavs being 9-9 right now and probably like 7-11, 6-12
maybe. Yeah.
Like I mean, his impact, you know, has been immeasurable. So I just can't, like, I am struggling, even if all the cap, you know, like the Nate Duncans of the world, if the Cavs sign him to a, you know, a 2-3 year deal with legitimate money, they're going to say, oh, Cavs overpaid. They kind of got caught up in the moment. But like, to me, I'm like, I can't imagine a world without Ricky Rubio on the team in the next year or two.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, and some of that is like how, you know, we've been held prisoner by just the lack of point guard depth. Yeah,
he's like our first good significant other after a run of bad ones. We really appreciate him.
Yeah.
He takes us out to dinner.
He never yells.
Calls us pretty. And like, you know, like, but to that end, like, that's, you know, like, I'm happy to overpay a little bit, like, past market value for that kind of stability for a player like that, because it's just like, especially if we're going to keep playing a team of 20-year-olds, like,
well, that's the thing, you need a veteran, you need someone knowledgeable. So then that's the other place where, do we keep or not keep Ricky, you know, comes in, is like, what are you doing with Kevin? Mm-hmm. And what are you doing with Jetty is still out there, I would imagine. Right now, he looks like he's on a massive discount. So
yeah,
I can't imagine.
Which is weird, because last year was like, how are they paying this guy $7 million? And
he's playing power forward and point guard, which
turns out that wasn't fair to Jetty Osman. Also, his jumper completely collapsed on him. But yeah, I mean, that combo of Ricky and Kevin, like, and I really do feel like, I really felt Kevin's absence while he was out from COVID. Like. Yeah. Like, and it's not the stats. I don't think he's had a crazy good statistical year. I'm pretty sure his splits are not that good. It's like, adult know-how in the NBA just goes so far. And in a Ricky Kevin set of bench players, just to like, I feel like JB just knows anytime that those guys in the starting lineup start to lose themselves a bit, it's like, okay, Ricky, okay, Kevin, go calm them down.
Right, yeah. Well, that's what you lost. I mean, against the Warriors, it was just a complete, like, self-immolation. Like, they just, and obviously you got some Steph in there a little bit. Yep. And sometimes, I mean, listen,
Steph will immolate you himself.
Yeah, great role players will go off. Like, that happens.
You are unbelievable. That wasn't even a good joke. It was just you just snuck it up.
It was bad. It was pointless. Against the Nets, kind of like for 3 to 5 minutes last night, they just completely fell asleep at the wheel. And you know, it's because you're out of people that know how to do things.
Yep.
Like you're playing Dean, and he's, like we've discussed already, he's been great, but you know, you've got Dean and Windler.
You want Dean playing, like, I mean, the thing that I kind of feel like people forget is, like, if the team's fully healthy, Dean might not be in the rotation still.
Yeah.
And that is a great luxury of the team to have. But, like, there's just a difference between Dean Wade playing 30-plus minutes and Dean Wade playing 14, you know? And, like,
right.
And on a night where, and, like, the fact that Dean Wade is their backup to their backup is such a great luxury for them. But, like, you know, you do start to feel it stretch when he's starting. So I don't know. I do feel like this team is, like, I don't know. Like, what is your prognostication for this team moving forward? Because I just can't shake the idea that if, you know, Mobley gets healthy and things right the ship, even with Sexton out, their ceiling is still materially way higher than I thought that it was going to be starting the year.
I think there's a path for them to maybe be around 500,
which is what I mean, maybe in this new Eastern Conference that's like the 14th seed because everyone's amazing all of a sudden, but but yeah, I mean what is that, like, I mean, maybe the 7th seed, 8th seed, like, could they get that high in your mind?
I could see them winning 44 games.
Yeah, which is crazy.
I could also see them losing a lot of games. Evan is just so, like, they have an identity. Evan is so good.
Yeah, like identity.
Just assume
identity plus
keep going.
Yeah, identity plus one to one and a half to two blue chippers, depending on how you feel about Garland, who is convincing me more and more that he's in the blue chipper category.
I think Allen's a blue chipper.
I just think it depends on your definition of blue chipper. I think he's a really, 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 really good role player.
That could be fair.
Because like Justin always talks about how his production is kind of the bellwether for how the Cavs offense is doing. But, like, it's not, like, Jarrett doing crazy stuff as much as, like, things are flowing and Jarrett is an elite opportunist.
That could be fair. I think he's a blue chipper insofar, like, I would define it as, you know, where does he rank in his position? And a center is not an incredibly deep position. But, I mean, after, you know, the obvious guys, Jokic, Embiid, Anthony Davis, like, I mean, that conversation, DeAndre Ayton is probably better.
Is DeAndre Ayton better? I think he's better, probably. But also he plays with Chris Paul and Devin Booker, so his job's pretty easy.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm saying, I think you could say Jared Allen's one of the better players.
Yeah, in his position group. He's in the 80th percentile plus minimum.
Right.
I mean, like, to that end, like, an identity plus two or three people you can really hang your hat on a night-to-night basis is a recipe to be better than people think you should be in the NBA. So, like, I think everyone's kind of waiting for this team to come back to earth. I think the injuries have sort of forced it a bit, which is why that 9-5 start was so important. Because, like, imagine if their record was what it really should have been, if they hadn't stolen three or four of those games that maybe they shouldn't have. All of a sudden, it's looking like the season's on the brink. But right now, they're okay. They're taking this one on the chin.
That's what someone said yesterday, and I don't remember who it was. I was scrolling through some replies. So, random person, if you're hearing this, I'm not trying to put you on blast. It was like, oh, the good start's washed away.
No,
they're only 500. Like, they're only, we're mad that they're 500. We're mad.
No way.
That this team that has lost so many games, like, an utter tomfoolery for the last 3 or 4 years is good. I mean, they're average by their record, but they're playing good basketball against good basketball teams. Like, I think they're good.
Yeah, I mean, only if you were expecting, like, a 47-win season would you say that anything's been washed away. I think it was a cushion that they built for themselves for the inevitable, right, one, still impossible schedule, and two, just bad injury luck.
Right. And I mean, it's miserable.
And they're looking much, I mean, you kind of, like, other than Evan, this is, I mean, they weathered it. They're back, you know, like, they're getting their bodies back, and really they just got to stay healthy now. Like Darius can't, you know, get I hope Darius isn't like messed up for a while, because that does seem to happen where it's like kind of that waterfall effect when your team starts getting hurt. But like overall, like I feel like they weathered it. The schedule's going to start like getting normal. It's not going to get easy yet. It doesn't really get easy until like a stretch in early February, which is annoying, but it's getting normal. There's going to be games where we think they should win.
Yeah, I mean, if they can get through this, they don't have Colin, they can be 5 to 6 games at most under 500. I think they've got a great shot to do something. What is something? I mean, you know, they could be the Knicks of last year, maybe not as good. But the Knicks had kind of a lightning in a bottle season. And if the Cavs can get through this schedule within shouting distance of a 4 or 5 win run that puts them in a winning, you know, a winning record or more of a winning record, like they could be a tough out, an annoying, you know, playoff team that if they get the right break, maybe win a series. Like,
not so bad.
Yeah. I mean,
winning a series is probably out of the question, but winning a play-in game, I mean, that is literally a format built for randomness and teams punching out of their weight class.
I only say win a series just because we've seen so many playoff injuries in the last. That's what I'm saying. When you
stuff
say it,
gets,
everything
when you
breaks,
get there,
right?
Stuff gets weird.
Right. Like you see an injury to a Bradley Beal or, you know, a Joel Embiid, and all of a sudden you have a team, two teams that I think the Cavs could really take. If they met him in a playoff series.
Man, it's funny you mentioned Bradley Beal. I'm like, yeah, but the Wizards, we're not going to play the Wizards. I'm like, oh yeah, Wizards are like the 2 seed.
Yeah, the Wizards are, yeah, they're okay. I think they'll come down a bit, but that's all right. And then I think maybe they should also still investigate just getting a guard somewhere. Just a guard.
I think wing help, some shot creation is definitely what the doctor ordered right now. But also remember, I think it is easy to forget that Mobley was a big offensive hub for them and was really developing into one. So it's like, we really feel Colin's absence right now, especially because Mobley isn't there to be that release valve for Darius. So I don't know. I'm just still feeling really, really excited about this season. Obviously it's a bummer for Colin. Obviously a 4-game losing streak is not fun, but like, I mean, 4-game losing streak pods normally aren't this positive, I feel. So, like, you know, while acknowledging some of the bad fortune the team has befallen, I still feel really, really good about it.
I don't think there's a way to feel bad about this season. Yeah. Like, at all. Well, there is a way that we will never speak of because it would be horrifying. But, like, then as long as Evan Mobley is ambulatory and on the court,
like, it's a good season.
You know, how could you feel bad? Like, they struck absolute gold. So yeah, I mean, no matter what happens, I think it's a great year for them developmentally. Man, I'm just ready for them to come back.
Yeah, me too. I'm counting the days. And you know, we do have some entertaining games to watch in the meantime, and we do have some things to learn. We're gonna see if Okoro can right the ship. We can see if Darius can keep this volume up, and assuming he's healthy, we can see this team continue to get healthy around the perimeter. Kind of start seeing Laurie maybe start to take a leap. I thought he had his best game as a Cav against Brooklyn. So there's a lot of really good stuff to see, and I am very, very excited about the rest of the season. It's fun looking forward to Cavs games every night again. Anyway, Mr. Morton, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you joining the pod and covering Justin's butt while he vacations at all-inclusive resorts with his wife. If you would like to support the Chase Down pod, you can subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and cook those books. If you are a fan of us on YouTube, go ahead and go to Cavs YouTube channel, hit a subscribe button, support the pod that way. If you want to support the pod even further, go ahead and leave a review at chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'll get you an invite to our exclusive Discord server that Mort will never, ever come to because there's no way he's ever reviewed the podcast. So thank you so much for listening to the podcast. As always, Justin will be back soon. And as always, go Cavs.